No one's going to hold me accountable? Oh, shit.
You can roll say whatever you want.
I got a lot to say. If no one's going to hold me accountable, we can do a whole other interview.
The views expressed on this recording are solely those of the artist, and by no means do we encourage or condone violence against law officials.
Oh, it's for you. It's for you.
Welcome to Blue Cheese. It's technically the 22nd episode, but Taryn just informed us and reminded me that we are making it in seasons now. And this is episode 1 of season 3. And I'm very excited to welcome a guest long time in the making.
Ben Solomon. I'm a filmmaker. I'm an artist. You know, like many guests on the show, I'm unsure how to qualify myself.
I love this part. So
I'll stick with those two.
That's pretty good. Filmmaker, artist. I'd say that encapsulates what I would say about you. I would probably say something like almost too cheesy corporate, like cultural producer. That's kind of lame.
Well, I'm trying to be cool because it's like your show. Okay. On another show, I would do the like corporate qualifier, like... pitch mode.
Like something that would be in a deck to someone.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Deck speak.
I've been making decks more lately for some reason.
Get the money.
That's it, right? I had my first intro to what people appreciate about the deck. And now I'm like, y'all, let's make a deck for this summer shit and get somebody in there.
People love them.
Yeah, they're really... I love them too. I appreciate how to the point they are. It's like, we don't need a footnote. Give me some good visuals with like... I love the pop-ups that come, or like the portrait that's in the bubble.
Ooh, that sounds very tech.
Yeah, that was a bit tech.
Yeah.
That was a deck that I was a part of like 2 years ago, and it was sent to me to pitch me to be a part of this thing. I'm like, wow.
Did you get the thing?
I turned it down because it felt too corporate.
There you go.
Just a little too corporate, but I've embraced the deck.
Yeah, the deck is good. The deck yields good things sometimes.
It's like people working at such high levels with a lot of money. It's kind of how I want information to be given to me. Maybe not in deck form, but like give me 7 to 8 slides of succinct information with the extreme, like the clear ask and what I will get from it. Like just, you know.
Yeah, I feel like in, you know, many times the clear ask is missing. And the 7 or 8 pages also is like 57 pages. And it's always like you have a very good sense of things that already exist that you like.
That's true.
What is it that you want to do? You know?
Yeah.
So like it can go either way.
It can go either way.
Seven, eight pages with a clear idea is well done and rare.
I think I'm pretty good then.
Respect.
I mean, I think, as I said, I'm making them as I would want to receive them.
Well, that's, you know, be the light that you want to see in the world.
Yeah, be the leader.
Yeah.
This was a total unintentional direction, but, you know, it's fitting. It's apt with the cultural producer. I mean, you have such, not unique, but like coveted. I would love this kind of line.
It's not unique?
Well, I mean, unique, not that people, I was going to say towing the line between art and brand, because that happens, but yours is... feels very bespoke and special for someone like me. Like I was going to say, it's the kind of bridge I would want to be on. And, you know, it's like, it's not like, I'm being very candid, but it's not like the cultural brands I'm cultivating for even myself at 52 Walker, where I need just clear money to help produce something. Yours is like, how can I bring the story of this thing and blend it with this story? And everybody is in this new narrative. Like I'm looking for behind the scenes, and like maybe there's, if the version of like a step and repeat was my, you know, their name would be on it.
Right.
But you like make brand partnerships with artists and like goods and fashion and music. And it feels
on
bespoke.
A good day.
On a good day.
Yeah. I mean, I've been very lucky to, you know, make a living and a career and have a voice creatively without having to do too many things that I'm not, like, personally aligned with or, like, attracted to. I mean, those jobs do come, and those are very much jobs as opposed to, like, a project or an idea or a, you know. And I'm very grateful for that. And in a lot of ways that I wouldn't say that it happened out of luck, but that's, like, you know, the cosmic timing and the geographic, you know, pull of New York City and, you know, just the world, multiple worlds, I guess, that I sort of, like, travel between, converge at a time and place that, like, allowed for me to do what I do. And
it's pretty cool, Ben Solomon.
Well, thank you.
Just recently I texted you about the Woo A1, A-Force ones, A-Force.
It's a dunk.
Sorry. My bad. I'm not a sneaker head, although lies, I present myself lies. That way.
There's, like, promo boxes in the office as we speak.
There are promo. Oh, I got the Iraq Converse.
Very good.
They're beautiful. So dope. I can't wait to wear them.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I probably knew they were dunks on some level, but I
yeah,
love.
Yeah, you know. Don't be coy.
I'm being coy. I love that branding, like that partnership. It feels like partnerships. They're really a branding partnership. That's what it is. It doesn't feel like there is any hierarchy, even though there may be. It's like people could love Woo just as much as they love shoes, or not know either one the same. You know, somebody could have never heard of Wu-Tang or something. You know what I'm saying? They feel really connected.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you know, and obviously that, I don't know when this episode comes out, but that all that content and all that stuff just came out. And in talking about it through the process and in, over the past, you know, week or two, like, those are kind of the two most powerful brands in a weird way, like, of our generation, kind of across the spectrum. Just like the symbols alone, you know, like the W, the swoosh.
The W on the dunk was just, like, so. It was just beautiful.
Yeah.
And, very poetic.
Yeah. And so to have the opportunity to, like, be a part of that project was definitely, you know, I guess with that, I don't want to sound corny, but it was a dream, and it was, like, an incredible opportunity. And I was glad I was able to rise to the occasion. I didn't have anything to do with that partnership or the shoe or that was a pre-existing, you know, Nike Wu-Tang project.
That was earlier. That was an earlier deck.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that the original deck must have been in, you know, in the 90s, because they made that shoe in 99, but they only made 36 of them. This time they made a whole lot of them. And yeah, but that's like a perfect example, right? Is that there's a lot of people that could make a spot for that or do the creative or do, you know, but my approach to that is something that sort of taps into all these different worlds and influences and like an understanding, or what I at least would like to think is an understanding that is, you know, not exclusive to me, but unique to me, and that can't really be distilled or transmitted in a deck, and more of just, you know, like a living, breathing knowledge and understanding and comfort level of those types of, not really brands, let's say, like, cultural, you know,
experience. They're like, it's the vibe. It's like the dunk vibe and the history of it and the Woo vibe.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what it felt like. That's why I was like, kudos, that creative direction, artistic, whatever, who, like, however higher up you are in that decision making process. I assume that you were vetting a lot of things because it was very tasteful.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, that one I was extremely involved in, and also just, like, very grateful to be given that sort of, like, keys to the car on a project like that, because typically in advertising, that's not really a director's role. Like, it's a lot more of a, you know,
yeah,
I don't want to say automaton, but, like, directing commercials can be many different things. It is often not creative and artistic and, you know, thought driven. And the Nike team on that, who brought me in, really let me drive and really took their cues from me and really trusted me with that, and that also extended ultimately you know, to RZA, and that was sort of like the craziest part of it for me to, you know, to come up with an idea. And obviously all of that is pulling from obviously a lot of like Nike foundational stuff, but mostly, you know, a Wu-Tang world that like RZA himself and you know, the other nine members created. So to be able to like write, you know, those ideas and then present them to the guy who, you know, sort of sparked all of that, was both, you know, intimidating and like kind of insane for my like younger self, I guess, but then also very validating when he was like, oh, okay, yeah, this is dope. Like, let's do this. And also he was, you know, he was super engaged and had his own take on things and his own suggestions.
Oh my God, then, you're just kicking with RZA.
Lightweight.
Oh my God.
But and then like on, you know, when we actually shot the thing, because you know obviously these things take months and months of decks and calls and this and that and the shit, and then when he showed up on set and everyone gets a little like, oh, what? And you know, I kind of had to remind myself and then remind everybody else, I'm like, RZA's made more movies than everybody here, like combined 100 times over. Like, he's directed them, he's starred in them, he's worked with the bet. Like, this isn't, you know.
That's true.
It's not his first rodeo.
Yeah, he's not coming in for the first time, not knowing what to expect. Okay, not a boring question. Exciting for me. What's your favorite Wu-Tang song? Or what's the one that comes to mind? Because my first that comes to mind is not technically a Wu-Tang song. It's almost always the first one that comes to mind.
What is it?
Daytona 500.
But what, are we distinguishing that a Wu-Tang song has to be on a Wu-Tang album and not a Wu-Tang
solo album?
I don't think that's fair, because then, like, then you'd have to get into, is a Wu-Tang song only a song that has, like, all 9 or 10 members on it?
And I would say it has to be, it would be a Wu-Tang song if it's on a Wu-Tang project.
But I don't think there's any world where you could say that, like, you know, Iron Man is any less of a Wu-Tang project than any.
I agree. You're
right. Yeah, so I think.
I agree.
Although it makes it a much harder question to answer.
Yeah. I mean, everyone would just pick the Killer Bees.
Well, yeah, I'm like avoiding the question now because I'm just pushing it down the road. I don't know. I go through moods.
We are the G-O-D.
Yeah, incredible.
It's like.
It has everything.
It holds a place in my brain always. I think I was going to get a tattoo that said Pune on it in high school, in college.
Yeah, I had to put the headphones on for this.
Yeah, you got to listen to it. Cause you can never fuck with Wu-Tang Killer Bees. Ooh, I can't turn it down yet. Okay, I mean...
You kind of got to let it go.
It's so good.
It's also like a testament to, you know, a Bob James...
The Bob James sample.
The right answer to any problem you have in the studio.
Also, this video, when it came out...
The Speed Racer.
Yeah. It was all genius. It was like speaking to the right kind of nerd that I felt I was too, and I'm sure a lot of people. The Bob James sample, Nautilus. So I used to work in a record store in Toronto called Play to Record, and it was the first time I really like I can't say like got into samples because that sounds weird, but you know, you're around the biggest music nerds, and I say that with so much love. I'm just gonna play this Bob James for everybody, and then I started getting really nerdy into like looking, like collecting samples, and then I would go to record sales around North America sounds like I went crazy.
Extremely
but I mean,
Canadian vibe.
I know. I went, you know, Toronto, Montreal, Detroit was a big one. You know, New York, getting into these giant rooms full of people with crates with samples. But it was so fun. It sounds, I'm admitting to this very nerdy moment. It seemed obvious to everyone else but me. Like when you first discover what a sample is and then you start digging for those samples and then you hear the eight bars that Madlib used on like Quasimodo or like, you know, Dilla found this one thing or like Mos Def. I found this Mos Def sample once on a 45 and you just get so nerdy with it. But the Bob James is...
Yeah, but even, I mean, or it even turns into like sounds, right? It's one thing when you're like, oh, this is the loop. This is the bass line. These are the drums. But when you get like deep into that stuff and you're like, you know, I mean, especially with some of the Dilla stuff where you're like, oh, this is like a sound that was filtered and then sequenced and, you know, and takes on a whole different light. And I think especially just going back to, you know, Wu-Tang is like a formative sort of thing, right? Hip hop as a whole, obviously, but, you know, the entry point to like understanding all these different pieces of history and culture and music.
Yeah.
Through, you know, being like a young kid, a teenager, whatever, listening to these records, whether that's leading you to samples or like some of the references or some of the lingo or, you know, I mean, with Wu-Tang also, there's like a whole cinematic element, right? Of being like, well, what movie is that from, you know? And like,
yeah,
like finding out about John Woo and shit
because of
listening to, you know, Purple Tape. And it's like, that, you know, you're like, wow, this is like on a silver platter. It's like, hey, watch this, like, listen to this album. I'm like, cool, I'm already listening to the album. And it's like, well, watch this movie.
Yeah, it was such a culture, the whole thing.
Yeah, and I think also that, like, you know, tradition and spirit and concept of, you know, reinvention. And again, sort of like taking what's out there, taking what's accessible, even if it's not necessarily fully, like, accessible.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, filtering it, reimagining it, chopping it up, like both literally and figuratively or whatever, and just emerging with this entirely new thing is, you know, just blew my mind as a kid. And I feel like that's what now, that's still what excites me. Like when I feel like I do a good job doing something, it's like because I was able to do that, right? Take an idea that, you know, you want to do something new at all times, but you want to be like at a starting point where people sort of get what you're talking about so that there's like a common ground and then take them somewhere new.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't know. I think like that, like just that you threw out Daytona 500 exactly. It's like how many, besides the record itself, like how many classic hip hop records come from that one song? You know, I can think of like five RZA records alone, and that's like not even counting like every other, you know, era and, you know.
Yeah.
So
when I first moved to New York, I had this dream of creating a bike tour, a New York City bike tour that mapped out Wu-Tang Clan members' homes and hangout spots.
It's very like, now it feels very like street art tour.
Yeah.
At the time, it was groundbreaking and unique.
It's true. And at the time, it was like, how can I get people to take the Staten Island ferry with their bike and follow me into this weird suburb area where some iconic hip hop stars were made?
Was Staten Island is also like a crazy just entity on its own. Like everybody I've ever known from Staten Island is like the most, you know, I mean, not that there's like a hierarchy of New Yorkers or whatever, but it's like, you know, this quintessentially like pure super New York energy, whatever. And then like totally different than anything else you ever encountered. Like, and I think again, like whether you're talking about like Wu-Tang or like people that I came up with, or even in like the graffiti world, like it's like it has a proximity to the city. And then like a totally, you know, it's like it's like when they go back in, you know, evolution or something, and they're like, what's the common ancestor? And then, like, you know, some species splits and goes into like a totally different, weird, crazy direction and develops all sorts of new mechanisms and, you know, like like that's what Staten Island brings. It's like, what if you took one arm of New York and just like chopped it off and put it in a separate petri dish, and it's like that's how
see
it
what
grows.
Happens
and it's bugged out, and it's like a lot of the, you know, a lot of really special crazy stuff is
comes
out
of there. You were born and raised in Manhattan.
Yeah, down the block from 52
Walker.
Oh,
down the block from here?
Oh yeah.
It's such a it's not boring, but I feel like it's probably something people point out a lot to you in maybe interviews and write-ups, be like, "Oh, a real man, it's like you're you are ET." You know, it's like you were actually born and raised in Manhattan.
Don't call me ET just because I'm short.
No, that's why. I didn't want to use the word alien. Actually, that felt not.
You didn't
want to
other me.
Yeah, I didn't want to other you, so I just use a real just go to Spielberg.
Okay, okay.
That's all I was doing. And why I'm mentioning that is because we were talking about Staten Island. Oh yeah, I was going to ask you. Somebody who lives to that point, like if you grow up here, does it still feel very borough specific? Because I when I first moved here from Toronto, I remember I had friends who were already living in Fort Greene and no Greenpoint. And I was just trying to find an apartment I could afford. I had no concept of neighborhood or where I wanted to be. And I said to them, I was like, does it really matter where I am if I can like get the apartment and there's trains? And they looked at me like, it absolutely matters what neighborhood you live in, because that's going to be where you live and where you are. But I was like, I'll just go to Harlem or go to, you know, Lower East Side.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I don't know that it, as a born and raised Manhattanite, if it is totally different or unique from anyone else. I think there's some things that maybe a native New Yorker picks up on in the subtle differences between boroughs, or like even like block to block or neighborhood to neighborhood. But
did you like go to Staten Island to party?
The first time I ever went to Staten Island, at least that I can remember, maybe once I went there for like someone's like, you know, for like a family. No, not even. The first time I went to Staten Island was to go to the WooWare store. Mm-hmm. Because I wanted to go to the actual WooWare store. And again, like, so what I would say is this. Being from Manhattan specifically limited the traveling that I would do as a kid, because my friends that lived in Staten Island, my friends that lived in the Bronx, my friends that lived uptown, or my friends that lived deep in Brooklyn would always come downtown.
Right.
Like downtown is where
that's
you meet
where you
up.
That's where you want to be.
You know, you meet at Washington Square Park, you meet at Wendy's on Broadway, you meet over here by Canal, you know, like, and so it had this like central pull. And in a way, you know, I mean, I don't think I missed out. I think I had, you know, I was very lucky and also had like a totally unique perspective as well. But I think there's like moving through the city on public transit as a kid, just sort of like, sorry, I'm like sick. And
it's
I'm
okay.
Like struggling for, you got to fix this.
Yeah,
in post.
We have good post.
But you know, like moving through the train, you know, I had friends that would come from deep in Brooklyn or Staten Island, even taking that bus to the ferry to the city, you know, like you're absorbing so many different layers and levels and cultures and sites and things to, you know, and I think I like missed out on a little bit of like necessity, like, you know, built in sort of travel time as a kid because I was in Manhattan, but I also had a sick advantage because I just I get to see my friends all the time and I don't have to like build in an hour and a half of my day to go do it. I can just sort of like, take a loop and,
totally.
And catch them out there. But, you know, I think borough to borough, there's a lot of very real differences. I don't, you know, I think, but also just like everything else in New York, it's like in constant flux.
Yeah.
So it's like the differences now are different than.
Do you ever see yourself living somewhere else?
I mean,
hypothetically, you could say anywhere, really.
Well, it's funny because you finished what, you know, your sort of lead into this question of saying like, well, if I get the apartment and I like the apartment, like, isn't that enough? And I think like now at a later stage in life, I do sort of feel like that. Like I could see myself living in any borough, let's say, if the situation was right and felt accommodating.
And
whereas like
what's going on in New Jersey?
New Jersey, I don't know. I think I'd rather live somewhere like far away than live in Jersey. But again, I don't know.
If the apartment's right.
I did some time outside of New York. I did some time. Jesus. I lived in a couple places outside of New York. No, yeah. God forbid. You know, I went to school in Boston, and then I lived in LA sort of like intermittently over the past 20 years for different periods of time. I wouldn't want to live in either of those places mm-hmm. again, but I think it's also very helpful to like get out of New York for a little bit.
I agree.
It helps give you some perspective that you're like, oh, like I don't know, I guess this, going back to your initial question, like growing up in the city and being here, it's like I didn't know that if I like left for a week that like everything else would keep going and like nothing and no one and no piece of any machinery of the city would like notice. You know, I was just like, oh, like New York's the center of the world. And then every single person in New York is the center of their New York or whatever. And then you like yank yourself out of it and you're like, oh, this shit doesn't stop.
It doesn't
like,
stop.
For a second.
It's true.
And that's like comforting.
It is comforting. It makes me feel less, or it made me feel less kind of exhausted by the idea that I had to like if you're grinding, you're grinding, and you'll do it here and you'll do it anywhere if that's what you're the center of, whatever you're doing. You know, it's not like you step away from New York and your purpose is different.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, there's definitely obviously technological and cultural and like, you know, polar shifts that have happened over the past 20 years, but I think there was a time probably when you ended up moving here and when I was growing up and all, you know, that it wasn't like that. And it was kind of like, yeah, if you want to do any of this, like you have to be in New York,
totally.
Depending on what it is. Maybe you could be in LA, maybe you could be in Paris, you know, these couple other places or whatever, but
yeah,
it's sort of,
I mean, graffiti, you know, we're not going to belabor. I feel like this is, I'm speaking to you and I consider you a friend.
We can talk about graffiti. Okay. I don't care.
Well, we're not going to go super nerdy, okay. But well, just to your point.
Can I go super nerdy?
Sure.
So if to a graffiti writer, the intricacies and the unique qualities of a borough by borough sort of analysis are very deep. And there's like, you know, and again, now with the flattening of the entire world, that goes across New York City as well, right? But like, back when, I don't want to say back in the day because I sound like I'm really old. Maybe back when sounds even older. But anyway, there
back
was a time
when I was a young lad.
Where, you know, when I was knee high to a grasshopper, you know, there was a time when you could look at a piece of graffiti and pretty much instantly you would know like, oh, this person's from the Bronx. This person's from the Lower East Side. This person's from Uptown. This person is from Queens. Without knowing who they were or because of a crew, but just because of the way, you know, they did their S or
right.
like what kind of shading they did on the, you know, on the throw up or whatever. And, I mean, that's like some super nerdy shit that,
and that's,
you know,
and that's dissipated.
Yeah. Because just like how people dress or the music people make or a lot of the art that people do or the, you know, like, there's a universal flattening where like Ohio and Michigan and, you know, whatever, New Zealand looks like New York and LA and, you know, and that's neither good nor bad. I mean, I think it is bad, but you have to be like,
we have
somewhat
to evolve.
Sort of,
we have to accept it and figure out how to, you know, persevere.
Exactly.
But New York, I was going to say, when you're like, yeah, every, you know, this is, you come to New York and that should make those things happen. But I definitely wasn't a writer in the way that so many people I love and admire were. But I was a fan and I had dreams. You know, I got up a couple of nights here and there, a few.
What did you write again?
I had
two. It was your DJ name.
No, two of them. I had two names that stuck. The first one was Linda. With a Y, and the
Linda
last
is sick just because it's just like a weird like name.
Yeah, just a name.
Yeah, that's fire.
I got into Roz in the end, ROZ, because I
was
good.
ROZ from Manhattan.
ROZ.
Yeah, Roz one.
Really?
TC5, yeah.
Well, not when I was writing. But I mean, I shifted because those letters, I was just better at ROZ.
Right.
But I mean, I would come to New York and be like on a art tour. You know, I was like in freshman year in college and I'd come try to get to Rock the Bells. And I'd be like, oh my God, look, there's a, look at that throw
up. You're so hip hop. I love yours. That you're like, I came to New York to go to Rock the Bells and then I decided I'm never going back.
I mean, it felt like you had to come to Mecca. This was like our hip hop, you know, dress, shoes, music, graffiti. We had to come to New York. Okay, this was something we normally start with, but we didn't. But that's okay.
Okay.
I like to ask people with no lead time, as little lead time as possible, what song they have on repeat.
Yeah, you caught me off guard.
Because some people, when I wasn't shortening the time frame with like to, you know, get the answer, people would spend too much time and overthink it. But your reply today was Gil Scott-Heron, B-Movie. I'm going to play a little bit of it for
it's,
the people.
It's like 12 minutes long.
It's 12 minutes long. We're just going to play the intro. People will get the vibe, I believe.
Okay, I'll throw
if you're not familiar.
On. Well, the first thing I want to say is mandate my ass. Because it seems as though we've been convinced that 26% of the registered voters, not even 26% of the American people, but 26% of the registered voters form a mandate or a landslide. 21% voted for Skippy and 3-4% voted for somebody else who might have been running. But oh yeah, I remember in this year that we have now declared the year from Shogun to Reagan, I remember what I said about Reagan. Minute. Acted like an actor. Hollyweird.
Evergreen.
Hollyweird.
Acted like General Franco when he acted like governor of California. Then he acted like a Republican. Then he acted like somebody was going to vote for him for president. And now we act like 26% of the registered voters is actually a mandate.
I mean, if this couldn't be more timely.
Yeah.
Also, this was the Reagan. I forgot. This was 81 Reagan... inauguration.
Yeah.
And also the beginning of the rapid disparities between black and whites in the country. And it felt like who better than Gil Scott-Heron to predict it, essentially. I'd forgotten about this album because I didn't listen to as much. This was considered later.
Yeah, definitely.
And this was when he split with that guy. Ricky did albums. I should do more research, but it's not my style.
I should too.
No, it's fine. That's not the vibe of this podcast. But he had a partner for his first albums. I have a computer in front of me. I can check. I forget his name. And then I don't remember why they stopped. Brian Jackson. His like famous 70s tracks were with Brian Jackson. But this was an album that wasn't produced with Brian. And why do you have that on repeat aside from the potential political connections right now?
So I think I first got really into that. So, like, yeah, off top, I'm not like a Gil Scott scholar. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I studied that. And again, going back to learning about earlier music through hip hop or whatever, like that's how I came to a lot of that stuff when I was younger. Mm-hmm. I didn't even discover this album till like at some point during COVID. Mm-hmm. And I think first, you know, a 12-minute song is like when I used to DJ, you'd look for a 12-minute song to go to the bathroom. And then like with, you know, an iPhone and a car, you look for like a 12-minute song. So you can be like, let me just listen to one thing for long enough that I don't have to be like, what's next?
Yeah.
And obviously in, you know, it must have been like still 2020 COVID era. You know, it just kind of blew my mind how like appropriate the song was, and just how, like you said, not only like prophetic it was, but also like contemporary. Like if you swapped out, you know, him talking about, you know, Ronald Reagan and, you know, John Wayne for, for Trump and whomever else you want, you're just like, oh shit, this is like bars. Like this is just right now. And also just the structure of the song is super ill. Like even, I think it's intro, poem song.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, it's like Kodak Black versatile, where he does like eight versions of the same song in one like extended, you know, loop of the instrumental. And I just feel like his words, his voice, the way that he puts it together and like performs, but also it feels very like soothing in a way. It has all the makings of my interests, right? He's talking about, you know, Dulles ain't nothing but an airport now, and you know, the history of, you know, the dark arts in U.S. government, and you know,
yeah, the conspiracy theorists.
But it's not conspiracy. It's just not straight up facts.
But they were deemed especially in that era.
Yeah, and just, you know, again, like just sort of, it does such a good job of naming like the cultural desire for like cowboys and Indians, and just to be like rescued by some Hollywood bullshit, and that really is like such a fundamental, foundational thing in America. And I think to listen to that and be like, this was recorded like before I was born, you know, about a totally, quote unquote, totally different situation, totally different time in the world. And it just feels just so evergreen, like in a way that a lot of things don't, right? Mm-hmm. Where a lot of things feel very grounded and like, you know, oh yeah, this must have hit so hard in like 69. But you're like, well, it doesn't hit hard now, but like this shit is like,
it hits.
Oh wow.
Yeah. You know?
And like, it's funky, it's dope. Like he's rapping, he's singing, he's like, you know, he does, you know, and he just kind of like takes you through that. And also it's like a very repetitive, again, thinking about hip hop, like it's a very repetitive, music, like piece of music, but you never get bored because he's switching it up.
And you're not waiting for the, it's like, it's all like the drop, so to speak, comes.
Yeah, it's like the drop comes in on the eighth bar just goes, and it's 12 minutes and you're never like, damn, I wish this would switch up.
Yeah.
Like,
because normally I'm super against something like a 12 minute song. I mean, I would see, if I see a 12 minute song on a contemporary rapper's album right now, I probably just.
I'm trying to think of like what the last 12 minute rap song.
Like, I feel like Chief Keef has some, but they're the secret ones where you don't know.
But that's because like 8 minutes of the song is like is dead air.
But then there's a song. There's something. But
that's not a 12 minutes. A 12 minute song is like 12 minutes of music.
That's true. I guess I can't. Maybe that's, it's good that I can't think of something. But I get turned off if it's 6 minutes, to be honest.
You have like internet brain.
I mean,
I do too, which is also why I think I like that song, because it's like, it's soothing and I can go on that ride.
Oh my God, do I have internet brain?
Are you Googling it? If you're Googling, do I have internet
brain?
And the answer is yes.
No, I was Googling, the revolution will not be televised, in case we have any listeners who aren't familiar with Gil Scott-Heron at all. Because I think it's something that probably seeps into a lot of people's, you know, like references, and just maybe don't know who it is.
Also, classic Nike commercial.
Is it?
That's like a deep cut. It's an old one.
What shoe?
You will not be able to stay home, brother.
Oh, I'm blanking out. It might be for an Air Raid or an Air Max, and also possibly it's also with William Burroughs in it.
Huh.
I can't remember if that's the same commercial.
Let me look. Let me Google.
The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions.
Again, evergreen.
I mean, come. I was just going to say, come like, on.
Next level shit.
Next level shit.
General Abrams and Spyro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia.
I mean, I think what's so dope about all of that stuff, and just like Gil Scott as an artist, and going back to Wu-Tang or whatever, is again this like saying evergreen is almost like doing it a disservice, but any great art, film, painting, you know, whatever, should be able to like come into the present and have just as much of an effect. Like,
yeah,
you know, like Shakespeare or something. Like, I don't know shit about Shakespeare. I'm not going to pretend to be like super smart or like
I've seen Leo DiCaprio.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, I there's like some pseudo semi famous quote about how like Shakespeare is written from the past and like reaches into the future. And that just kind of blew my mind. Cause it's like, oh shit. Like you can, when you read some of that stuff or when you listen to these records or you look at certain pieces of art or whatever, you're like, wow, this is speaking to me directly now in this moment, but also like to the time that I exist in.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's sort of like the illest accomplishment that anyone creating anything can accomplish.
I can only hope I leave a legacy that feels relevant to two generations from now. Do you think you're going to leave a legacy? Do you think about that? Also, I was trying to, while you reflect, I remember reading a Gil Scott Heron biography, I think called Home. If anyone's listening and I'm wrong, I'm Googling it right now, but I think that's my first, no, it wasn't called Home. It's a different biography. Anyways. Okay. Legacy.
I mean, I hope to. I think everybody, and especially anybody that uses their brain and hands and soul to try and make things, hopes they're leaving a legacy. It's not, you know, you hope it's not for naught, but, I don't know. I think it's funny that you said like, oh, I hope two generations, because when you think about the speed of time and production and consumption, mm-hmm. and, you know, it takes like, it would take years for not only for like an album to come out, but for like criticism and conversation and cultural discourse around a thing to coalesce and 30, 40, totally. 50 years later. And now it's like, oh, we put the teaser up at 11. We put the thing out at noon.
Yeah.
Five articles came out at 1. Podcast came out the next day. And like, you're fucking lucky if someone's talking about anything you do 48 hours later.
Yeah, totally. And I feel like a part of that speed of production and being one who is part of producing it, maybe feel it's like, I don't even have enough time to step outside and I don't see myself. I know that sounds in a corny way. I have not fully absorbed what it is I'm doing. I feel like I have to really be removed from it to even reflect on anything I've done in the last 10 years, to be totally honest. It's not quite, I gave this like lecture at Bard a couple weeks ago, and I was trying to describe this very thing, but I was using imposter syndrome. I was like, I don't think I'm an imposter, but I can't quite see, you know, if anyone listening, I'm doing this like circular motion with my hand. I can't quite see the totality of what it is I'm doing or have been trying to do. So I can only hope that, you know, by the time the generation that is born in 2050 study art, if they do, or whatever kind of thing, whatever they're going to study, if that's even around. But more exciting here. I found the Nike commercial.
Able to change the channel, you will not be able to catch the highlights on the evening news.
Enjoy. This is a Air Max 95, right?
No. What shoe are they wearing? Jason Kidd, Jimmy Jackson, Marquez, Eddie Jones, Joe Smith, and Kevin Garnett. When Kevin Garnett was still on Nike, wow.
It's also KRS-One.
It's very different. Very different archetypes there.
I loved Kevin Garnett and Jason Kidd.
Yeah, I mean, that's like the classic era.
Yeah.
But that's sort of like, you know, I mean, that's 95, so they'd already been doing it for a minute, but that's sort of like blueprint style, you know, whatever, advertising, utilizing like a serious, you know,
mm-hmm.
cultural force, like that song, which I'm sure at the time people were like, this is bullshit. This is selling out. This is fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean,
people love to say that.
Yeah. People love to say all sorts of things.
Yeah.
People don't love to be like, that's cool.
That's true.
Great idea.
I was a huge sellout when I opened 52 Walker.
Right, right. Like, wow, you did the thing that everyone works towards.
It's like, you're such a sellout, Uncle Tom.
Yeah.
I was like, thanks, guys.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see y'all at the opening.
Yeah, and then they all showed up, I'm sure.
Yeah, they did.
And now they're sending you decks.
Some of them have sent me decks.
I believe it. But I think that's also like a, you know, funny remixed and reinvented and like reconsidered thing now. Like the concept of selling out doesn't really totally exist. Like people in a moment of like fear or hating or frustration will like say something like that to you or say like, oh, you're selling out or this or that. But like, it's like the everyone's like initial goal entering whatever it is they're doing is sort of like, I want to sell out. And it's an odd, you know, and I think again, it's like it permeates a little bit of everything, right? It feels very like Trump style where it's like, oh, I'm just telling it like it is. Like, I just want to be I just want to do the big thing. Like, you know, I don't know. And like sidestepping the sort of like more indulgent or like low key and, you know, intellectual sort of explanation of like art or my practice or like what I'm doing. And you're like, oh, I'm trying to like get paid, you know, it's like I don't know, in a fucked up way, that's sort of like it's a very like American thing, but it's also like it's like the negative side of like hip hop as the dominant force, which is like at the end of the day, like if you're getting paid and you're doing your thing, like anything that disagrees with that is just like a hater.
Yeah.
And that is a double-edged sword because like everyone should go for theirs and be successful and be as big as they can be and as the world will allow them, but also like principles and considering
integrity, morals. But I mean, I'm like I said this before, I'm a capitalist.
Yeah,
but I say that like I believe in equitable capitalism, so I don't want to.
But is that real? I don't know. See, I'm not. Like
that's my you know, dream. Yeah, that's my theory that I'm idealizing. I know I don't think socialism is possible. I don't think communism is possible. That would be a complete paradigm shift, especially if you're a person of color. Like somebody was talking about socialism. I was like, you think Black people would find equality in a socialist community? I mean, that is such a pipe dream. I can't even wrap my head around it, but I can wrap my head around the potential for capitalists to try to operate in a more equitable way. So, and that could mean in America, very small steps, like taxing rich people and putting that tax money. You can wind up the camera. It's okay. We have wind up cameras here, everyone. We're doing a new episode 3 branding. You know, taxing super rich, putting that money towards healthcare. I mean, I'm talking like very basic human, like humanity.
Well, by today's standards, you are a socialist communist if that's what you want to do. Well, yeah, I don't know. I don't think I'm that smart on many topics. I definitely don't think I know enough about all of this to have too many, you know, I think.
No, I'm not proposing to have any kind of
But yeah, I think the idea of some sort of like, well, again, it's like going back to, you know, B movie or whatever. It's like when the ideals of, you know, individualism and exceptionalism and like Hollywood happy ending and good guy wins, bad guy loses are like, so, and then evolving into like, you know, whatever these other principles that come in through hip hop or through punk rock or through graffiti or whatever, you know, whatever that like, you know, might makes right and all these other things. And it's like, I don't know, you get, it's like hard to step back from that, right? When you're like, well, that's what you learn, and it's, you know, it's like, I don't know, it's kind of, it's like a nature versus nurture thing. It's like either way, that's what you're fed. It's both. Mm-hmm. Like you're getting it in the nature of your environment and the nurture that you're given through that environment. And it's like, you know, do you, like, you know what I mean? It's like,
do you is the most hip hop also. Come on.
But that's like the most American ass shit of all time.
Yeah, it is the most American ass shit. It's true.
And, you know, but I think it's good. I also think that, you know, like, I fuck with that. Yeah. I am going to do me.
Me too. Oh, 100%. I'm so petty. And it makes it actually, I think it's such a positive for me. I mean, I hope everybody could internalize this kind of pettiness for their own well-being, because it's a way to deal with so much bullshit that's shoved at you. And just know you will internalize it, and the petty self that you are, you're honing that, you're like training that petty muscle to do you, and they will fucking see. Like, I will dish it back, but in the most graceful way, respectfully. I'm a do me, respectfully. And I can't wait for the shade you threw at me to come through the door, and you expect to be part of this community. Like, little
spoken like a little true things. Capitalist.
Yeah, it's true.
The revolution will not be televised.
It will not be televised, not here. Okay. New tab. One thing I love to do on this show is rapid fire questions.
Okay, let's go.
I think I gotta cut. Yeah, I was gonna say migraine. I think your sick brain and headache.
It might help though. Yeah, you'd be instant. No, exactly. My defenses are down.
I think you'll be just foggy enough to be super honest, and nothing's incriminating. So don't worry.
I'm an open book.
And I'm also a little under the weather. Everyone, I've taken some Tylenol just before this recording, but. And I'm saying that because I don't want to pause too much on my delivery. Okay, here we go. Morning or night?
Morning.
Driving or flying?
Driving. How far am I going?
Driving. Doesn't matter. I don't know.
Well, that's a very relative question.
Oh, but you said
driving. I like to drive.
Well, there we go. That's the answer. Would you do like a cross-country drive to LA?
I would. I only did it once. It was in 2005, and I got my learner's permit after being in California for 3.5 months and got in the car and left.
Okay, let me qualify it a little bit more because this is interesting.
Okay.
If you had everything needed to make it the most comfortable drive, like maybe even an RV that was souped up or something, you know, it's not like you're grinding on the road and like you got to find a place to pee and go, you know, like it's comfortable and fun and you're with the best company, whether that's yourself or someone or some people, like it's the most ideal driving situation.
Yeah, I'm driving.
Over flying.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's a true answer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Books or movies?
Movies.
Night out or night in?
Night in.
Salty or sweet?
Again, very tough question.
It's rapid fire. You're supposed to just answer.
Combo, Reese's Pieces.
Oh boy. New York or LA?
New York.
Clandestino or Clockwork?
Baccarat.
Me too. Dime Square or anywhere else?
You know.
That's just a cheeky one. Summer or winter?
Summer.
New York or Berlin?
New York.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Iced or hot?
Iced.
Texting or calling?
Again, that's like a flying or driving. What do we got to talk about?
See, I'm a texter.
Yeah.
But that's not true. That's actually, you're right. I prefer, if it's about work and actually getting things done, task oriented, I want to call.
Oh, see, I'm like, if we got to get it done, it's text. You know, this is like a thing, Kunle and I would talk about, and he'd always be like, there's no like emotion in text. You can't, because I'd be like, yo, what's good? Are you good? And he'd be like, yeah, I just answered your question. And I'd be like, yeah, but you just were like, yes.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, because you asked me the question. So ultimately, you know, if you
got to
get her done, I'm going text. But if there's layers, I'm a phone call. You know, I mean, I'm a talker.
Yeah, I kind of feel like, if it's a work related, like a task to get done, or you're working towards a goal, it's never going to be just one text. So like, let's get on the phone. Let's pick the date it's happening. Let's pick the place. But it never ends.
It's like the second we get off the call, then there's the text, then there's the other text.
Then there's the email summarizing what we just talked about.
There's the group text, then the side group text, and then the one-on-one text about the two other work shit, not socially.
Yeah. Socially, I never want to call. I always want text socially.
Yeah.
I have gotten a little bit more. I've become more of a fan of the FaceTime, though, with really close friends at night. Because there's only about four of them who I'll let me see with, like, my head wrap on and a glass of wine after. Like, you know, it's like 11 p.m. And that feels like a hangout now.
Right.
Feels like I'm chilling with my
mommy mode.
Yeah, for real. Yeah, that's like instead of going to the bar, I FaceTime. Okay, next question.
Keep it going.
Patterned or plain?
Pattern.
Oh, really? That's good. Oh, that's good. That's interesting.
Yeah, don't. If you like stop, and then yeah, I'll be yeah, like, no, well, stop. Let me expand on this here.
Painting or sculpture?
Painting.
Video or photography?
Video.
Headphones or speakers?
It's tough.
Oh, come on.
It's a tough one.
Speakers is what you're going to say. Yeah, speakers. Car or train?
That is actually tough because honestly, so I drive a lot. I love driving and I miss certain train rides. I miss certain like New York City extended train. You know, it's like mm-hmm. in the summer, it's like we're going to go to Coney Island. I'm driving. I'm never taking the fucking train again. But I miss taking the F or the D to that last stop and like not only seeing the graffiti, but again, like I was talking about earlier, like traveling through the city on mass transit, especially like, you know, elevated or like exterior trains mm-hmm. is the illest way to see and understand the five boroughs, because the way that you move through just neighborhoods, cultures, people, time of day is like, you know, that's invaluable knowledge that you are not going to get sitting in a car, sitting in an Uber.
Agreed.
And so, yeah, so I'm driving, but I miss taking the train.
You know, the other day someone, I was talking to someone about traveling in the city and I told them how much I prefer the train. And I really, oh yeah, we were talking about, so I have a car, but it's really for, I don't even know, it's for like weekend trips or whatever. But I take the train every day and it's the only time I'm alone. It's the only time in the day where
I'm surrounded by thousands of people,
yeah. But they don't know me. They're not coming to my office for something. They're not like coming into my bedroom for something or the kitchen or the Zoom or, you know, get people walking into the space or like everyone wants to talk to me here or something. It's like me and my headphones and the New York Times podcast and the crossword. I mean, thinking about it just gives me so much joy. I would rather be rerouted on a train line that has construction and take an extra long train route than get in an Uber.
Yeah, I think taking the train as like a, maybe not a daily routine, but as part of like a built-in piece of your routine is crucial to being a New Yorker. I don't really believe in the concept of like a real New Yorker, this or that or whatever. But I think like if you're not taking the train on a regular basis, mm-hmm. whether out of necessity or out of like you're saying, like sort of like some form of joy,
yeah.
like you're missing out.
Yeah, I agree. I have a friend who just lives in Harlem and has never taken the train.
Yeah, it's crazy. That's crazy.
ASAP Rocky made me love the one train.
Oh, I thought that was like a ASAP Rocky or, and I was like, who are you putting Rocky against?
Oh, I should do one. Let me think while we keep going.
I'm picking Rocky.
Me too. Rocky or Ferg?
Rocky.
Yeah, Rocky.
But shout out to Ferg.
Shout out Ferg. We love Ferg. But that Rocky album.
Not based on an album. Just
he's just dope. Actually, one of my favorite, you know, you probably have this too. There's like go-to music related things that I play all the time. And I have for over a decade. Like I remember when I started dating my partner and we did like Kitchen. I hope he doesn't mind me sharing this, but it was called Kitchen Politickin'. We're such nerds. But we used
that
to...
sounds like a podcast.
I know. It does. Well, that's what we were doing, essentially.
Okay.
Just like smoking weed in the kitchen. And we would say crazy phrases, and it would become a mixtape title. Because I'd be like, oh, I'm going to get some ice cream, for example. And it had almonds in it. He's like, oh, I hate that ice cream. I'm like, why? He's like, it's like unnecessary crunch. I'm like, mixtape.
It's a good name.
So we started this list. But the reason I'm saying this is because, what did I start saying? Kitchen Politickin'.
ASAP Rocky.
Oh yeah, things that you play all the time. Things that you play all the time. And when we're doing like, we do like one for one songs. And every once in a while, he would be like, are you 50? Like, Why do you keep playing that? Why do you keep playing the same song?
Why do you keep playing Gil Scott-Heron and Wu-Tang Clan?
He's like, why are you playing that Mobb Deep song from like whatever? And he, at first it was cute, but then I still go back. But one of the things that I always play, which is not even a song, is a freestyle that Rocky had with Tyler. And they freestyled over,
over
the Kanye.
Yeah.
Fucking love that video and that whole shit. It's so good. I play it all the time. And it's only on, it's not like a song, so I play it on YouTube. And I have it on my phone and then I can't turn it off because then I don't have the premium YouTube.
YouTube is the best streaming service, period.
Oh, shit. That is...
That should be one of your questions. YouTube or Spotify? And if someone says Spotify, you just cut the episode right there and cancel them.
Word. So you are strictly a YouTube?
Strictly nothing. But I have everything. I'm on everything.
But you love YouTube.
Yeah, because YouTube will have everything.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if it's not like radicalizing your teenager or like brainwashing your toddler, it does have like a good algorithm if you're into like weird, you know, disco or hip hop or like drum and bass deep cuts.
Yes.
But if you start watching like political commentary, you'll end up a Nazi in three videos.
Well, then that's the danger, because I didn't want to close these. I was going to just show Taryn after as a joke. But I love a YouTube rabbit hole.
Yeah.
And mine always takes me on like fucked up crime, court shit. But just the Gil Scott-Heron I opened up. Now I have a tab open, like things that I want to watch. And one is like, world's most disrespectful teen learns a lesson in authority. And the other one is 1983 documentary, The Pimp's World.
That sounds ill. Right? Send me that one.
I will. The thumbnail picture was like this cliche
pimp
black dude and his world. With his white woman leaning, like looking scared of him. I mean, it's like 1983. And then I opened another one about Ronald Reagan. Like, I'm just going on the YouTube hole. And that doesn't really happen.
Ronald Reagan is fucking bugged out.
Did you see that Freeway Ricky documentary?
The reason that I'm a filmmaker, maybe let me fact check this live before I say this, but
it's
I believe
we can edit
that
it.
The reason I'm a filmmaker is because, yeah, crack in the system, right? Okay. Yeah, so that was directed by Mark Levin, mm-hmm. who is essentially like the reason that I am a filmmaker. Mm. And, you know, maybe also the reason I was like into things like Iran-Contra and like JFK assassination theories and whatnot as a child. Mm-hmm. But actually also, not so surprisingly, I actually haven't seen that doc.
Oh, you haven't?
But I should watch it.
You should watch it.
Crazy stuff.
It's crazy stuff. And I also have no room in this podcast, whatever podcast room I'm in, for people who are huge fans of Rick Ross. Because he's a liar. The rapper.
Well, but
he's
a really good liar.
Oh, boy. He's a good liar.
But all artists are good liars, first
of
all.
I know, but this dude just got, like, you know, Pusha gave him a pass. Like, rappers would go on songs giving him straight-up passes for not just lying, but stealing someone's straight-up identity while you're a prison guard. And then trying to just get some retribution when he came out of jail and Rick Ross was like, fuck you.
But there's a lot of rappers who are, you know, who you love, who all those guys took their names.
You can fib on what,
but I'm saying 50 Cent is a person that isn't 50 Cent. AZ is a person that isn't AZ. Like, those are all, you know, and
it just felt wrong because he was also a prison guard. I mean, he's and he lied about it when confronted.
I'm not here to,
but yeah, okay.
The most evil, most evil, greatest era of YouTube, since we were talking about YouTube, and 50 Cent and Rick Ross is 50 Cent, Rick Ross, YouTube beef era, which was where all that Officer Ricky shit started. And those are some great videos.
On YouTube.
Yeah. 50 Cent, Psychic Told Me. And it's like a video of like DJ Khaled's like mom sleeping at her job.
Oh, shit. No,
and also then there was like Pimp and Curly, where 50 Cent had his like pimp character. You were just talking about the pimp. Great stuff. Sick man.
Taryn, note for our content. Okay, a few more A few more rapid fires. That was a good tangent, though. I recommend Freeway.
Yeah, I'll watch it. I'll tell Mark that it was recommended on the
Please do. I hope everyone watches it. It was on Netflix for a long time, but maybe not anymore. Where am I? Tupac or Biggie?
Biggie. But I love Tupac.
Okay.
Another incredible actor.
Oh, shit. We need a part two with Ben Solomon. You know what? I have a dream of a call-in version of this show.
Incredible.
Where the only other person we've talked about doing this with is Diane Martel, who was one of my idols.
Legend.
You know, I'm going to talk about you as though we're not friends, Diane, but we are now. And Diane started following me one day. I mean, Diane's such a connector. Also, she was just really on this, like, it was before 52 was open. So she was like, this sounds so cool. Like, what is this thing? Because she does art shit. But I remember taking a screenshot and circling her name and sending it to Nikita Gale. And I was like, what the fuck? Diane Martel just followed me. It's like, you know, she was like one of the only, as a young woman in hip hop, I mean, that name as a director on all of my favorite music videos coming up.
Yeah, Diane is a legend.
Okay, Nike or Adidas?
Nike.
Leather or denim?
Like pants or jacket?
I don't know.
Denim.
Pool or beach?
Ooh, pool by the beach.
You're not allowed to give. You're not allowed to change.
All right, beach. Okay. Beach.
Public or private?
Private.
Chocolate or vanilla?
Chocolate.
Broccoli or squash? Ooh.
This is hard.
Rapid, just the first thing. You don't have to overthink it. No one's gonna hold you accountable for something that you say here.
No one's gonna hold me accountable. Oh shit!
You can roll say whatever you want.
I got a lot to say. If no one's gonna hold me accountable, we can do a whole other interview.
We're not gonna have dinner, and then someone's like, "You said broccoli," and bring you a plate of squash after.
I enjoy both.
You know? Okay, Madonna or Cher?
Madonna.
Beyonce or Rihanna?
Beyonce.
Britney Spears or Christina Aguilera?
Christina.
I love how Britney and Christina are not one namers on this list. You know, it's like Madonna, Cher, Beyonce, Rihanna. Then it's
what
not.
Do you mean? Why? You could say Britney or Christina. You're not. Is anyone on this show like 18 years old? Anybody know? We know who that is.
Yeah, I guess.
That's your own hang up.
That's
my
Those
are
shit.
Definitely single names.
Yeah, that's my own shit. Okay. Chicken or fish?
Chicken.
Window seat or aisle seat?
Window.
Can or marker?
Marker.
Coke or Pepsi?
Coke.
Movie theater or streaming?
Movie theater.
Michael Jackson or Prince?
Prince.
Times New Roman or Helvetica?
Helvetica. Bold.
Oh.
I'm a deck guy. You gotta know what you like, you know?
That was a good rapid fire. Okay, my last new tab question for you. Then I'll let you get out of here and take care of yourself. Sliding Door moment. Do you know the movie Sliding Doors? 1990.
Yeah, it's
nine. I should know this off by heart.
No, I do know it. It's a. It's not
Gwyneth
a...
Paltrow. 1998.
Yeah, wait. Is it an Altman movie? I know this movie. Hang on.
Gwyneth Paltrow is.
Oh, no.
You know, there's something that prevents.
It's definitely
her...
not an Altman movie. Jesus.
There's something that, you know, she's heading home after a terrible day. And in one version, one direction of the narrative, she gets on the tube. She's in London. She makes it. And her life goes in this totally different direction.
Goop direction.
And if she, it's really goop. But the other direction is like non-goop.
Okay.
Because she misses the train. And so the chain of events that happen, if she, were she to catch it versus not, are very different.
It's all about physics.
It's about physics, serendipity,
okay,
time, space, continuum, all that shit.
Love.
So it's not quite an answer of like a moment, a specific moment, but if you didn't take this path maybe as early as like getting into with a crew in New York or like going down a particular way that turned hip hop into creative art, like in this way, is there something that feels like a 180? For example, just an example. One of my guests said they really liked ballet dancing and did it when they were younger and probably would have done that if they would have been more serious about it, maybe could have been a serious dancer, but it's something totally different now.
So, hard question for me to answer. I don't know what my 180 would be. I would say that sometimes I think that my trajectory and interests and output and input and all these things has been, it's sort of like all consuming and all inclusive, but still this very like central Ben version of it, I guess. Mm-hmm. And that, I wish there was like the other thing that I was like, oh, it could have been that. Cause I don't know what it would have been. Could have died. That would be that's like the obvious easy one. Mm-hmm. I'm very grateful that that didn't happen. I don't know that that's something to aspire to or like, oh yeah, that would, but you know, that was like definitely a real piece of the story that things just went like a little slightly to the left or right many times. That could have been the ending, and you know, very grateful that that's not how it ended, and you know, seeing a lot of great potential and people and ideas themselves that were like destined for who knows what, that you know, were cemented as legendary because there was no time for them to like succeed or fail. Mm-hmm. They just like stopped, mm-hmm. and then it's just like frozen in time. So I'm grateful that I think I am living my 180.
That is great. You are living the life you were meant to live. That's not something many people can like feel or say. Which is cool.
I feel very grateful and blessed to say that and actually like believe it, because I think it's something that many people maybe could or would say, but because it's something to say, I don't know. I feel like I've been blessed with the good fortune to do what I came to do. And what I'm going to do next, I don't know.
I hope that we'll remain friends for whatever comes next, even if it doesn't change.
Depends how you edit the podcast.
I don't think this one's going to need that much editing, to be honest.
There you go. All right, then friendship secured.
It was a very easy conversation, as I knew it would be, which is why I invited you in like April.
Season three,
episode one, baby.
Well, first episode of a new season sets the tone, sets a new narrative arc, introduces a new character. Like it's perfect.
You'll come back for the call-in radio.
I'm down.
It's a great idea, right? I feel like we keep having this idea of a Patreon to try and get someone to, I don't even want to make money from this, but just like equipment, you know, we're just like buying our own shit. I'm like, maybe we had some kind of paywall.
You should get like really ridiculous ads, like the worst ads that you could get,
like erectile dysfunction pills.
In the process of writing a treatment for erectile dysfunction pills this week.
Send me the deck.
I gotta finish it. That was the email that I sent with the wrong name. I'm not even kidding.
Well, there could be something that should, you know, it's happening.
Yeah,
we're here for this ad.
We'll see what comes back.
I want to do real, like, radio PSAs where I'm reading that, right? Like, I don't want to play a spot or a
like
cart.
NPR style.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. For, like, erectile dysfunction.
There you go.
It's not so dysfunctional anymore. Okay, Kendrick or Drake?
Drake.
Yeah.
But like, there's merits.
I know. They're both, and it doesn't mean you hate the other. It's just
I know where you stand.
I stand.
I gave you my answer, and I gave it very quick.
You gave it very quick.
I don't need to justify it.
You don't. I'm not even asking you to. We might cut this part, but I've been thinking, you know, sometimes you get a scene in a movie in your head. I'm sure you know.
Yes.
The scene's been in my fucking head for like, I'm not, maybe 3 years. It's not just recent, but it constantly replays. And I'm hoping that if I play it out loud here.
Oh, listen to that. Okay.
Yeah. It's 20 seconds. So why don't you tell me, this could be a new segment, but why don't you tell me if you know what movie this is from?
Okay.
I can't stop thinking about this scene.
Let's go. Let's go. Let's go after that time, man. Let's go, let's go. Let's go.
Let's go, let's go. Let's go.
That's tough.
I saved.
Stumped.
It's John Voight in Varsity Blues.
Oh.
When the team turns on him and they finally don't want to like play for his shitty ass.
John Voight is a fucking character as well.
Is a really fascinating character. Guy. Real fascinating, like biography too, right?
Yeah, but he's a kind of insane, like in a real way, like in an old school Hollywood kind of like Ronald Reagan type of way. Interesting cat.
Well, it felt good playing that on here. I was hopeful that maybe.
No, sorry. I don't think I've ever seen Varsity Blues.
I recommend.
I'm down. Vanderbeek, right?
Yeah, Vanderbeek. I don't know why. It feels very early. Like, what's that other movie? What's that movie with Omar Epps and Halle Berry? And she's his tutor. It's a football movie. The Program. It feels like, is it around the same time? It's after, actually. It's post The Program, and it's a little more like, for the kids, The Program tried to be like a serious for football people, and Varsity Blues is like TikTok version of The Program.
Yeah, Varsity Blues just makes me think of like Not Another Teen Movie.
Totally.
Which if you had played a scene from, I would have said, oh, this is XYZ scene from Not Another Teen Movie.
Oh, really? Is that one of your, you can just recite?
Parody movies of the, you know, late 90s, early aughts hit. Shout out to the Wayans.
Dynasty. I can recite all of New Jack City.
That opening scene did a lot for BMX bikes.
For BMX bikes?
Or whatever, like, you know, he's chasing the kid.
And then he goes over. Yeah, I didn't know that there would have been like a.
I just think in my mind, I was like, damn, maybe riding a bike is cooler than a skateboard.
Oh, word. I was just focused on Ice-T.
Yeah, well, you know.
At the time.
Classic.
Van Peebles. If I was going to get into film, it might be because of Van Peebles.
Yeah, I mean, that.
Rock-a-bye, baby.
Yeah, she's so dope. Man, that movie's fucking fucked up.
I love when one of my favorite scenes is when they're taking over the Carter and Wesley Snipes is like giving everyone jobs. And Christopher Williams, who is an R&B singer.
I am familiar.
And he was like, you're in charge of computers.
Yes, he's classic. Like,
yeah.
And also when they get raided, they dump. That movie's very advanced because they have all the clientele on like a disc.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you remember when they're raiding.
Yeah, yeah. And they take it all out and they burn the discs.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm also fire. Weren't these all like crackheads that lived in the, like, they just lived on the, you know, the Starship Enterprise? Like, who was the, you know.
Oh, a lot like, of the, like the client. Maybe, you know, they probably had more like, you know, supplier shit, like.
The CIA.
Right.
Yeah, great movie. I'm a Dutta Man guy.
I'm a Dutta Man too.
Yeah.
The Dutta Man.
Yeah, incredible. Incredible work. Incredible Jeep.
And you know, walking through the club scene. 6 minutes.
Yeah. Flavor Flav.
Dougie Fresh, yeah. I mean that slowdown, that slow mo.
Yeah,
eyeing I always each other in the club.
That's a movie if you watch now, you're like, what club is this at? Like there's a lot of like, you know, there's always in those, like, in all the classic New York films that are actually, like, done and live and breathe, and it's always like, where the fuck is this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
King of New York or New Jack City?
New Jack City.
Okay.
When he was, like, the L.A. boys, and he was part of the gang, the L.A. boys, and it was, like, Lexington Ave, and I lived on Lexington Ave in Brooklyn. I was like, were there actually...
Wrong Lexington.
I thought it was in Brooklyn.
In New Jack City?
Yeah.
Not New Jack City's all
up. No, he talks about his mom.
Oh, really?
Yeah, them being like poor in Brooklyn. I'm pretty sure.
New Jack City's very Harlem.
No, I know it is.
And now I gotta rewatch it.
Yeah, me too.
Rock-a-bye, baby.
Well, we'll end it on that New York tip with my New Yorker guest, Ben Solomon, cultural producer. Thank you for being here. It was
really
fun.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, this was awesome.
And I hope you don't feel too sick.
I think I feel better now.
Episode season 3, we got green room snacks.
Craft services is crazy in here.
That's essentially what I live on at work. That's all from downstairs.
As you should. All right, thank you very much.
See you soon.
Thank you.